Welcome to Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed, the only show that equips you with everything you need to know about restaurant transactions. In this show, we tell you all about how to make the sale or purchase of your restaurant not just possible, but successful. Now, here are your hosts, ex-restaurateurs and seasoned brokers, Patrick Toda and Andy Mirabel.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed. I'd like to introduce Jordan Reese Cohen from Brick and Mortar Legal, a native of San Francisco. Jordan brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to the table, particularly in the restaurant hospitality industry. His firm specializes in key areas such as business formation and transactions, licensing, ABC compliance, commercial leasing, acquisitions, equity, debt-based financing, and trademark protection. Over the years, we have had the pleasure of collaborating with Jordan on various transactions due to our shared industry focus. As many of us agents who have worked in the restaurant industry, Jordan also has hands-on experience in both the front of house and back of house within the restaurant sector prior to being an attorney. Jordan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you are focused on the restaurant industry?
Absolutely. So when I was in law school, I kind of thought that, you know, one of the areas of study would piqued my interest. And none of them, you know, did by the time I was out. And while I was waiting for bar results, I was waiting tables, not sure exactly what I wanted to do. And I had the epiphany that I wanted these people to be my clients. I had waited tables all the way up until law school. And so I went to the owner of the place I was working. I said, "Do you have counsel?" They said, "Yes." They introduced me to him. And that's how this got rolling. And I worked with him for a number of years. And then he was a mentor to me. And I hung up my shingle shortly thereafter and started Brick and Mortar Legal. So I've been doing this for the better part of 15 years now and working with the industry, and it's great.
Was it you tugging on the, you know, the sleeve of the counsel of the restaurant you worked at, or did they say, "Hey, you're suited for this"? Like, it sounded like a good fit. How did that kind of organically
happen? I was already an attorney at the time.
I'd
gotten my bar results while I was there, you know, and I had done interning in other areas and things while I was in school, thinking those were areas that I wanted to do, environmental and more civil work things. And it just, you know, it didn't seem to click. But I ended up really enjoying the business side stuff. My corporations class was really great. So that's probably the closest hint I had to what I'd end up doing.
That's great. You were at the bar while you passed the bar. It sounds good.
That's exactly right.
Good. I can personally say that, you know, I call you often and with a lot of questions, and I probably bug you more often than I should, but you are a wealth of knowledge. It's so great to have someone specialized that we, you know, can call regarding the legalities and lease and ABC questions. So we really value you. All right. We're here today. We're talking about a new law. So we're going to have a conversation today about SB 478. It's a new law that is taking effect in California on July 1st. We're going to be getting into the details shortly. In short, the law is looking to ban fees on restaurant checks that include service fees, healthcare fees, cost of living fees, and other itemized fees that are other than sales tax. Anyone who dines out in SF knows that you often see a healthcare charge that can be 3, 4, 5% or more to offset the county mandated healthcare ordinance. This is a good example, and Patrick and I have both lived and experienced these in our own restaurants when they were open. I'm going to take a specific excerpt out of the Senate Bill number 478, Chapter 400. Just kind of, it summarizes something that I think for the listeners here that I think will help us throughout the podcast today with Jordan here, if he gets all highbrow in legal terms, you know, because I'm on a lower level than he is here. Okay. The bill would, beginning on July 1st, 2024, with specified exceptions, additionally make unlawful advertising, displaying, or offering a price for a good or service that does not include all mandatory fees or charges other than taxes or fees imposed by the government on the transaction as specified. That, in a nutshell, means you better put a price, you put or include everything in the price and advertise it as such. Don't include anything else like a surcharge. So I hope the listeners kind of understand where we're coming on this. This is a big deal in California, and it's going to have a lot of ramifications on our beloved hospitality industry. So we can go from here, dive into some questions, Patrick.
Yeah, let me just start off by saying in 2013, that's when I got married. And 2 days before I got married, I went to Koi here in San Francisco, which is a pretty high-end restaurant. And I remember sitting, you know, we were getting ready to check out, and there was a couple next to us, and they were from either Vermont or New Hampshire. I can't remember exactly, but he kind of tapped my shoulder and was like, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" I was like, "What's going on?" He was like, "I just got my tab, and there's this healthcare mandate charge for 2.5% on my bill. What's this about?" And so, you know, I went into it and explained a little bit about it and why the restaurants were doing it, you know, to have full transparency instead of just raising their prices, to understand that they're passing that cost off to the customer because they can't absorb that cost as a restaurant. And he was furious and just didn't understand why he should be responsible to pay that, given that he was from out of the state. And he called the manager over. You know, I tried to diplomatically explain it to him, and he was a pretty reasonable dude, it sounded like, but he definitely did not want to pay that bill. So I'll always remember that. And here we are, what, 11 years later, and they've now have a SB 478 to kind of tackle this whole thing.
I like the fact that you brought that up and said it kind of felt like a unique situation. I had a casual upscale restaurant in San Francisco from 2010 through the pandemic. And around the time that the city mandated the healthcare ordinance, we struggled and just racked our brains on how we can absorb this cost. And so did every other small business owner in San Francisco. We tried to band together. We tried to fight it. We want to pay for healthcare, but a mom and pop Main Street business often can't absorb that cost, especially a mandated high cost that this was. And I know Patrick said that was a little bit of an isolated situation, but I would get this literally multiple times every night on peak nights from people out of town that don't live in San Francisco. And they just were like, this is crazy. I don't want to pay for this because, you know, it adds up quick. So it became quite a hot topic in the mid 2010s, the 20s, right, Jordan?
Very much so. Yeah. I mean, you know, from my perspective there, and this isn't a legal perspective, but they're going to pay for it no matter what. You know, the restaurant can't afford it. So it's going to have to charge the customer to generate the revenue for the expense. And that leads us into 478. I think the intention of 478 is good. I think that it's going to clean everything up. It's going to make things easier. It's going to prevent those type of interactions. But this rollout and how it's happening is, you know, flawed. It's going to be very difficult. And, you know, we're going to see in real time whether or not customers can deal with however restaurants decide to handle.
What do you see as one of the larger flaws? I mean, again, I'm going to revert back to my going through the experience with the healthcare mandate is I, like Patrick said, I thought it was us as a business owner being transparent. Guys, this is what we price our food at. And it is listed on the menu. It is listed on the check. And this is a good cause for everyone. We want to be open about it. And, you know, it just didn't really work out that way with the customers.
That's just marketing, you know? Yeah. I mean, obviously, their perception of it was the problem. It wasn't whether or not they're going to pay for it. They weren't realizing all the other expenses they're paying for that the restaurant has that was built into the price. You know, these certain items were on the outside of that. But aside from the SF Health mandate, you know, it's my understanding that was often put on checks as sort of a protest to make it clear that this is going to be a very difficult thing for restaurants to handle, and it sort of gained a life of its own and whatnot. But, you know, restaurant surcharges came along after that, you know, not counting auto gratuity for large parties and things, which is a separate issue and part of this as well, 478. But those service charges were a way to make it more equitable for, you know, all of the staff. You know, when I waited tables, I made 5 times as much money as someone in the back of the house. And I would bet that they could come out and do my job as a server, but I could not go back there and cook the food.
Yeah, you know? Well said.
So it was not the truth.
It was not fair. And, you know, everyone's aware of it. And we had a policy in there where we would tip out the back of the house and things, but it wasn't significant enough to change the disparity, you know. And so, you know, and I don't know if you want to jump through all these things, but that I think we're going to get to. But being able to share some of that money that's coming through the restaurant, whether it be a gratuity or an auto grat or service charge amongst everyone, became a very smart and equitable thing to do for everyone.
Why are there so many roadblocks? Why is it illegal? And why are there so many roadblocks to it? It seems like a very logical thing to do. I did it for a very long time and it made my cooks and dishwashers and everyone happier than they were before and they deserved it.
So you were doing it without having a service fee? You were just pulling out everybody?
Me or Jordan?
You.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, you know, I don't know exactly what's happening in your restaurant, but you know, I think one of the big questions is this, and I see this in the comments section on some of these articles read about 478, you know, why can't they just share the tips with the back of the house that I leave on the table? It's against the law. So in California, you are not allowed to share gratuities that are optionally left by the customer with anyone that's not in a chain of service. And so, you know, a chain of service would be a server, a busser, a bartender, a barback.
Okay. It seems a little counterintuitive that part of the service is preparing my food and putting it on a plate.
It feels arbitrary to me, quite frankly, that they're just cutting it off there.
Is that a job title? I mean, can we just fix that with a job title and just...
That's a good question.
If you were truly audited and you were put under scrutiny, I would guess no. You know, I mean, they have a definition in there about what it means to be in the chain of service, and it essentially breaks at the front of the house, right? For the most part, you know, as well as managers are not allowed to share in tip pools either. Someone that has the ability to hire and fire someone is not allowed to participate in a tip pool.
That I was aware of. I just did not know that the reason why we had service fees was because we were getting around that law that employees in the back of house could not share in the tips. That changes everything for me. I can't believe I did not know that.
Yeah. And I think that's a big issue, is because you already had this law that feels antiquated. It's not a good fit for the where the industry is at. And especially in places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, places that are very expensive to live, where only some of your staff can really afford to live close by. And so it becomes extremely hard to retain people and keep people in the restaurant.
So can you kind of give us your nutshell version of what SB 478 is and the purpose of it, you know, in a compact way, so people, our listeners, can understand it a little bit better too?
Yeah. So at the heart of it, 478 is really just to prevent deceptive pricing. And so the creators of the law want all of the cost up front. There'll be nothing added at checkout, any sort of fee that was, you know, it can't even be a listed fee. There can be no fee anymore. It all needs to be included in the price that you see. And they, essentially, they don't want people being duped into doing business with a certain business because of a headline price or some sort of low priced item. And then there's some sort of mandatory fee at the end that they weren't aware of. And it's kind of too late to back out, or they didn't understand that they were paying it or something like that. So this really is about deceptive pricing. And the intention, which the writers have been very clear about, was that it did not include the hospitality industry. This was really directed at, well, hospitality, include hotels, but it's meant to include hotels, airlines, ticketing.
Exact. What about companies like StubHub who like hit you up with those fees at the last second? Are they included in this?
They are included. And oddly enough, Live Nation, who may have read a few days ago, is now, you know, being hit with an antitrust suit. The government wants to break them up. So they actually were in support of this. They had apparently already started to implement sort of the similar pricing, oddly enough.
Just a quick question. When I'm at a restaurant in San Francisco, I notice at the very bottom of a menu, they'll advertise that they do have a 5%, you know, healthcare mandate fee that will be added at all checks. Is that marketing and being transparent? And is that a get around, or is that not going to work?
It's not going to work. And so up until now, whenever restaurants have been challenged in court about those kind of pricings, that has been okay. It said, as long as it's clear and transparent and conspicuous, that's fine. No longer can it even be conspicuous. You could have at the top of your menu in giant font that says 20% service charge or health fee. That is no longer going to be acceptable. So, you know, this kind of goes back to the top of our conversation. It feels like the answer here is again, a kind of a marketing issue. It's like, look, you no longer have to tip us. We will not accept it. But, and now this is it. And enjoy. Please enjoy what we're showing, you know, the price we're showing you. And we'll take care of the rest.
You know, we're going to obviously hit on some of maybe the unintentional consequences and effects of this, but really think back to, I think to the guys that go around, you know, and catch restaurants for not being 100% up to ADA compliance. Of course, we should be up to ADA compliance, but if a table is not perfectly, you know, 36 inches apart or whatever, the bathroom bar is not, you know, 2 inches off, there's people looking for that, and they create a lot of lawsuits over relatively frivolous things, and it's intentional. Okay. Is this going to happen on July 1st, where
there's concern about that?
Hundreds of thousands of restaurants don't update their POS checks, their menus and stuff in time, and groups are just going to go after them and try to catch them.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's the big concern here. The penalties are enormous. It's $1,000 per violation, however many that may be per customer, right? There's restitution, punitive damages, injunctive relief, and attorney's fees on top of that. Disabled citizens and senior citizens also can get an additional $5,000 in certain damages as well. And there's a lot of leeway for government enforcement. Public prosecutors have a lot of latitude that allows them to kind of go after certain civil penalties. And so there's disgorgement and other sort of things that really make this could be quite detrimental to a business that's hit with a class action, for instance. And so where you have many violations piling up all at once, attorney's fees on top of that, potentially punitive damages. I mean, that would completely it require the restaurant to shut down. I mean, we all know that there's no extra for the most part, right? Margins are very thin. They wouldn't be able to field something like this. And so back to your ADA comment, you know, you worry about, one, you don't want people violating the law, and restaurants don't want to be violating the law. That's not the thing, you know? And with ADA, a lot of them don't know. They don't understand what a violation might be. For instance, I had a client who during the pandemic put IKEA tables out in front of her bakery, very tiny bakery. Someone came and sued and under ADA violation because those tables were a couple inches off the regulation height of what it needed to be for ADA, right? You know, this was not something that a CASP inspector or something would have ever caught, you know, had they come in or whatnot. This was, you know, a very unique time. And she tried to create a solution for her customers and ended up being very detrimental to her business. But on top of that, you worry about some bad actors, right? People that are not there in good faith. They're not there to actually dine. They're not a customer that would otherwise been there, but for maybe them trying to come in and find a violation. Now, we don't know if that's going to be an issue or not. We do know there's some concerns about that with ADA stuff, but we hope that's not going
to
happen.
To your knowledge, what sort of outreach has been done in, you know, in San Francisco? It's all over the news and, you know, restaurant associations are, you know, informing us about it. So you would hope that the majority of the owners are aware of it and change it. But I mean, we're talking about all of California, small towns, big towns, rural towns, all this stuff. So how much has been invested in actually outreach to inform the business owner? Do you have any idea on that?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, I'm probably the wrong person to ask because I'm all over this. You know, it's a big deal for my clients. It's something we're paying a lot of attention to here at the firm. You know, and you allude to the fact of how many people is this going to affect. I don't know how many places are really charging, you know, high service fees in outside of urban areas or places with high costs. It's unclear. I don't think it would be necessary in places like that, or not as necessary for that matter. It really depends on the business model.
It. Do you think this law, I mean, it really, like I said earlier, it really cast a really wide net. And you said restaurants weren't originally going to be included in this. Are we an incidental victims here? I mean, is it, when did they change that and make us part of it?
So the law was, you know, it written in October 2023 is kind of when it was finalized. And it was unclear at that time where the restaurants would be included. And the industry asked. They asked for clarification and the attorney general turned around and said, yes, you are included. And that kind of set off this firestorm, right? That's when everyone kind of was made aware of this law and what it was going to mean for the hospitality industry. A lot of that noise turned into later they released an FAQ, I think about a month ago, maybe, that was really specific about how restaurants are going to have to work with this law and what they can and can't do. It still actually created a lot of questions around some of the fees that have not been mentioned that certain businesses do use. So the counsel now that we're trying to give is, you know, be weary, you know, assume that it's a violation unless there's a carve out. Whether or not you can have an optional fee, is an optional fee acceptable? You know, is a quasi optional fee where it's on there, but you have the option to remove it. Would that be acceptable or not? As opposed to opting in, you have the option to opt out.
Got it. That's interesting.
Yeah. We're seeing about what do you do for large parties as well? Because that's no appropriate. You can't have auto gratuity. So if a large party leaves a 1% tip, that blows up, you know, the compensation for those servers
being on that party. That's been going on for a long time. I mean, that's been going on way before all of this fees have been added. It's kind of been common, you know, etiquette to have that. And everybody's really comfortable with that part of it. Can I go back real quick? As part of this law coming into effect, are like restaurant groups trying to have the service fee tips be shared with back of house as another change in that law? Are they looking to revise that law by any chance?
I haven't seen any movement there. That's an interesting point of whether or not they could get the tip pooling law adjusted so they could share it or not. That's an interesting point. I haven't seen anything about that yet. I think, you know, we're still waiting to see if there's a potential carve out here. The California Restaurant Association, you know, is challenging the law, may go to court. You know, I don't think it's a strong challenge, but they're giving it a shot. They're definitely creating a lot of noise with it, which is important, you know, for their stakeholders. So we'll see if they're willing to do something like that. But as of right now, the response from the attorney general is not, you know, they don't want to cooperate with that.
So this thing is going to take effect as of July 1, and there's nothing going to hold that back at this point.
Yeah, the only, you know, the only small caveat to that is that the FAQ did say, and the FAQ is not law, but the FAQ did say that they are not going to initially enforce, at least at a government level, service fees that restaurants are charging. That's not a goal of this law. They understood that. Of course they can, and we don't know when they will make that a priority. But the big issue is still customers being the ones that are truly actually, you know, bringing the enforcement and like the ADA law and so forth. That's where we really run into issues. You know, it doesn't, may not matter that the government isn't going to get involved at first. You know, we still have all the customers that can.
I scratched my head a little bit. We just went through recently, you know, the big news was, you know, $20 minimum wage for fast food workers, right? But they put the bar after X amount of units, that's when that kicks in for a fast food. It didn't apply to Main Street restaurants or for quick service fast food restaurants. I think they're missing the boat a little bit on this one by making it a swath, you know, applying to everyone.
I think it benefits those multi-unit franchises because what's going to happen is, and this is me just thinking out loud a little bit, but the McDonald's of the world are going to automate their employees, right? So they're going to have minimal amount of employees in the future. But the employees that they do want to have, they kind of have a leg up on the mom and pop business because they have to pay them a little bit more. So they're going to get the best of the best, I think personally. And then they're only going to have, they're going to have less employees than they normally would need because they've started to automate everything. So I think they might have lobbied to have this bill for certain, you know, units above a certain number. I mean, that's just me thinking out loud a little bit.
It could make sense and just draw more back of house employees away from, you know, 1, 2, 3 unit operators. So, all right. This is good. You can see this is polarizing. We've basically hit a lot of the points already here. But what, you know, when I called you about this, Jordan, I think it was funny because for our listeners to hear, we started talking about it and you had to bite your words some on our phone call. You were a little worked up over it and it was kind of fun and it made me smile that, you know, you really had an opinion about this. So give us your opinion and don't hold back the cuss words, okay?
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to maintain my professionalism here. You know, the reason why it feels a little rough is because I'm hearing it directly from my clients and they feel like they're being really jerked around, right? I mean, they're constantly having to pivot and their costs are going up an exponential amount. They had to deal with COVID. Their rent is extremely high. You know, it didn't really come down as a result of COVID. Labor is extremely expensive. All the cost of goods and the food they have prepared is extremely expensive. And here they are trying, you know, the ones that are doing the service fee in good faith that aren't, you know, trying to pocket it, which is technically possible, but is sharing it to give everyone a living wage in the restaurant. You know, they're building a brand and a team feel and all this. A lot of these servers at places that do include these high service fees are high-end restaurants, many of them. They can go work anywhere, you know? And a lot of them are actually working for less than they maybe could at a place that doesn't use service fees, that uses direct tipping, because they believe in what they're doing at that place. And now you have this issue. And it's not that they can't still do this, but now you don't have that service fee and the SF Health. And so if they increase prices by 25% to compensate for that, is that going to affect how many customers sit down and eat at the restaurant? It feels like it will. Now, the customers will not be spending any more than they did the last time they were there, but the perception on the menu may be tough. And so I think that the rollout is going to be difficult. And you're asking restaurants that they're in the business of hospitality and serving food. You know, now they have to deal in a marketing profession and PR and all of these things that, you know, they really should not be required to do just to survive. If they choose to do it, that's one thing. But, you know, it's very difficult having a business like that in the Bay Area to begin with. And I don't know, this just makes it a little more difficult to have to pivot, which feels like on a dime fairly swiftly for places that have this really built into their culture.
My opinion is that it may have less of an effect on, you know, fine dining, real upper tier, because the disposable income of those customers, you know, there's less of a concern about it. But that massive middle class of restaurants, right, you know, I really think it's no effect. I couldn't sell my burger for $28 at my restaurant, which I would have to at this point. You know what I mean?
And does it put San Francisco at an unfair advantage versus other cities in the Bay Area? Because I, you know, when I was younger, all the cool restaurants were here in San Francisco, right? And now there's restaurants throughout the entire Bay Area and all those people from the suburbs aren't coming to San Francisco already. And now if we're starting to raise our prices because we have to cover the SF mandate, as you said, it's marketing. So they're going to, it's going to look like that burger or that steak is way more expensive than in their city. And I just wonder how that makes even more challenging here in the city.
Sounds tough.
More so than the next community, it sounds like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gosh. Well, we kind of keep touching on it, but, you know, are the consumers going to pay the real price, the true price for each menu item? And there's going to be sticker shock. Oddly enough, our industry seems to be resilient, in my opinion. You know, we were looking from 21, 22 on after COVID, and, you know, we have a quote recession-ish, you know, environment here. And we go to the, we look around at these restaurants and there's still people out buying. The seats are still full, but the margins are so slim. It just, it's tough as an operator. So I think from the consumer standpoint, we want to remember just because you see seats, you know, butts and seats doesn't mean that they're doing well. There's just so much that they have to cover. And this is a new layer.
fair. I mean, some of the solutions I'm seeing are wild. Like for a large party, you would have a separate menu that has your higher pricing, right? To compensate for that auto grad that you can no longer do.
That's a good idea.
Interesting. You know? Yeah.
So here's your six or more menu.
Well, when I owned my restaurant, you know, you had DoorDash and they said, the menu that you have with us has to be in line with the menu that you have in your store. So you can't have two different prices. And I wonder if then that becomes non-transparent again and you get yourself into trouble having two different prices for the same thing. What do you think about that?
Well, notably, delivery fees are excluded for these delivery apps, right? Yeah. So, but what they're saying, look, that's a service that they're providing that's separate. They're not preparing the food. You know, that's how they're justifying it. What they've not done is differentiate between delivery coming from the restaurant or delivery coming from a third party. They have been non-specific about that. You know, another thing that comes to mind is I've had clients call and say, look, can I still charge for corkage? Can I still charge a cake cutting fee? You know, these sort of things.
Wow. Good question. Wow.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, that's an item. That's a line item. That's a thing. It's a service that you're providing, right? It's not an extra fee, you know, but these are things that they're wrestling with that they have to think about and, you know.
Question for you, Jordan. You said one of the creative solutions for large parties, that one really stuck with me when you're like, no more auto gratuity on a party of 20. Can you imagine if that's your one table for the night as a server and you get stiffed at no fault of your own?
Exactly. And that's the problem, you know, with tipping is, you know, I don't know if you've read them, but there's studies now, you know, that show the disparities in tipping, right? Like anything, you know, people of color are tipped less generally. Yes. White people, you know, things like that. You know, service fees get rid of all of this. It makes it far more equitable. And then it prevented that problem. You know, it prevented someone getting stiffed for the night. So everyone's compensation is much more foreseeable with the service fee. Now, you know, hopefully this is not as big a deal as everyone is thinking it may be. And hopefully customers can swallow and go, look, I love that it's like this. No problem. And we'll still have that foreseeable compensation for the employees. You know,
running my staff and my teams, I just feel like GMs and managers and owners are going to see a lot more upset and a lot more tears when these things happen, and rightfully so, when these things don't go right. People do need to step up. They need to tip appropriately, but it did help when it was almost forced. Check a box. What percentage do you want to tip?
I mean, look, I've worked in the industry and then I'm like industry adjacent now. You know, I loved it when it's just service charge. So for me personally, this is great. It's all the same to me. But for those that, you know, want to control the amount of gratuity that they give to you know, their server, it's very different.
Andy, how often at school did a server get a really bad tip? Like, is this like when I say really bad, like under 15%, does that happen often?
You're putting me on the spot to make sure that my service was up to par at my restaurant, Patrick. We got good tips all the time.
I'm just wondering how many douchebags there are out there that do give like really low tips.
You know, I'm not going to generalize. There was definite times that this happens for no good reason. Sometimes it would be for maybe a younger demographic that may not want to shell out the extra $250 on a $1,000 bill, you know, for a big party and things like that. So it happened. It's part of what we grew up learning. We have to take the good with the bad. I think there's going to be a hangover on this one. And I think there's going to be a timeline for people to catch up and know what is truly right.
Yeah. I'm hoping it does away with, you know, why is it my responsibility to pay for X? You know, that comment seems very common in these debates. You know, why am I forced to pay for this? That's how it is in every business.
There's going to be a rash of, unfortunately for quite some time, a rash of bad reviews calling the manager over because how are you charging $75 for your half chicken now? And you know what I mean? It's going to be that for a while because they're charging true prices, you know? Yeah. So again, these things, it's a slingshot. It takes a little while for us to catch up to it.
Yeah. I mean, some places are going to go back to traditional tipping. It's going to happen, you know, but I've talked to some of my clients that it's impossible. It would be impossible to do it based on how they compensate everyone in their business. I mean, could you imagine that your entire kitchen losing 60% of their income overnight?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, and transversely, can you imagine the operator doing what sounds like the right thing and increasing their hourly wage or salary to the place that, you know, that makes them whole again? Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You're going to go bankrupt real quick.
Yeah. And notably, California doesn't allow for a tip credit, right? And so in other states, you can lower the compensation for an employee based on how much tips they've made, right? And that those tips can go towards the overall compensation and the restaurant saves a little bit of money there. But in California, you can't do that. So, you know, a server is still going to make the minimum wage no matter what, you know, and then still go home with a few hundred dollars in cash.
Yeah. I hope our listeners can understand and hear it. Like, we all wholeheartedly love the hospitality industry. We've all been in it. We've had our restaurants. We've all worked there. We're on their side. And it's one thing after another that they can't just go and focus on making good food, you know, giving good service and going home at night. That is the farthest from the truth. If it's not one thing, it's another. And this is a big thing we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is San Francisco, I assume they're not, but are they going to rethink the healthcare mandate or anything, any other of these like fees going to be rethought since this kind of puts certain cities in a predicament?
I haven't seen any signal of that. Yeah. Yeah.
So you brought this up earlier, Jordan, and again, who monitors this? Or I know there's maybe a little bit of grace period, but who's enforcing this? Is it the customer that has to engage and make a claim? Who's the enforcer?
Both. So the state is allowed to. As I mentioned before, they said they're initially not going to make it a priority for restaurant service charge. But notably, it's the customer. If the customer sees a service charge, they can
call a hotline.
I mean, I don't think there's a hotline.
Okay.
You would hope that one would contact the restaurant directly and say, look, you know, this isn't appropriate. Da, da, da. But, you know, there's going to be people that don't do that. And it rarely happens. We have Google reviews. We have Yelp. We have all of that on top. You know, it's going to be devastating. I think there's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some restaurants that are going to be made a martyr of this that we're going to see in the media. They're going to, you know, have to hit this head on and deal with something publicly.
With the SF mandate thing, we keep going back to this because there's a lot of similarities here, but I was one of 101 restaurants that were quote unquote taking the health care, you know, funds that we put into a separate account and pay for the, you know, health care charges from our staff. We didn't commingle that with other funds, but just holding that in an account and managing it properly turned into a thing, you know? So yeah, you're right. There's going to be martyrs here. It's going to be sad to see. I hope, you know, the restaurant owners and stuff really do their best to follow this and don't be martyrized.
Yeah. I mean, so much of it is based on misunderstanding on the part of the customers, right? Yeah. And it's not necessarily their job to be up on the laws, right? I mean, they don't know that you can't share a tip pool with the back of the house and all of that. If they knew all of these things and saw the whole picture, like with many situations, I think it'd be a little easier to swallow. They'd be more of a team player. Maybe they'd even be an advocate. But it, you know, in this situation, the most vocal people, I feel like, are missing a piece of the puzzle. And it's making it more difficult to swallow.
Back to the monitoring. I mean, does the future hold our tax dollars going to having agents going out and check, you know, monitoring things online and what the menu says and what's on it, or going into a restaurant and testing this? It's a lot of money.
You know, there's a lot of rules that our clients have to deal with outside of this, and not seem to be enough manpower in the state to audit everyone and make sure everything is compliant. There are far too many businesses in the state of California to deal with this. Notably, though, the federal government is now also looking to implement a similar law. We'll see. Yeah. And this has been a goal of this administration, is that they, you know, countrywide want to get rid of these type, you know, consumer protection is just big in general, and get rid of these, what they consider to be deceptive, you know, pricing, and which is great. It's great. It's just, it seems in this scenario, California restaurants have gotten swooped up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. We love when we talk about it when it comes to airline tickets and huge hotel fees and things like this for these massive corporations. The little guy is getting stepped on again here, unfortunately.
That's right.
Yeah. So what do you think, Patrick? Did we complain enough about this?
I think that's enough on the SB 478, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. We want to end with a question for Jordan that doesn't relate to this.
Sure.
You know, so I think what we're going to stick to for a minute is, if you could do anything in the world, Jordan, and you didn't need the money, what would it be?
Oh, wow. It's so funny. You know, I always tell people that if being an attorney didn't pay so well, I would have kept waiting tables, because I loved it. I loved the hours. I love the people. You know, I'm huge into food and drinks, you know, my free time, cooking and all that. So it was just perfect. I don't know if it'd work with the two little kids nowadays. It's pretty.
No.
I mean, I've always wanted to, like, if it didn't matter, I always thought it'd be cool to have like a little restaurant.
You are crazy, but you're with the right people.
Now,
right?
I know. It's like, now I would, if money didn't matter, you said, you know, I own the building. I can work whatever hours I want. I can serve
there you go.
I want, you know,
That makes sense. Well, you can tell our listeners then that they can call us if they really need help on that, because we can help you. But if you call me, I'm going to say, no, you know better. So,
that's right.
My wife won't allow me to have another restaurant unless it's a hobby.
Really? Wow. My only parameter is if I own the building. That's it. That's the only way I'm going to do it again, because I don't have
that
the
energy. That would have to be number one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Got it. Well, I really thank you, Jordan. You're like a wealth of knowledge. You're so easy to talk to. You're so knowledgeable. And I just like, you know, we really appreciate you. So I hope our listeners did too. I know they will. And we thank you for talking about this subject.
It was my pleasure. Honestly, anytime.
Good, good. All right. So let me plug the next episode. I'm going to be pretty brief about it. Episode 4, we're not going to bore you with many more law talks. You know, sorry, no offense, Jordan. Tune in and see what exciting industry guest and subject we have all teed up for you next week. So join us again.
If you enjoyed today's show and don't want to worry about missing an episode, you can follow the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you found today's episode interesting or useful, please share it with someone you think would benefit and consider leaving a rating and review.
Reviews help restaurant owners or buyers just like you discover this podcast and benefit from the important topics covered in the episodes. Your opinion matters to us as a listener, so feel free to leave topic suggestions and feedback for us, as we will use these to tailor the episodes to you and help you get the most out of listening. Visit www.therestaurantsalesbroker.com/podcast for step-by-step instructions on how to follow, rate, and review.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed. If you're considering selling your business and would like a free consultation, reach out to Patrick and Andy at therestaurantsalesbroker.com or visit www.therestaurantsalesbroker.com to learn more.